You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As we head into the last few days before Christmas, there's a good chance you might still be looking for that perfect gift or just a cool place to celebrate with friends and family. And a lot of small businesses in the region are hoping that you will choose local. But what is the state of our small business community in Sacramento? Today, we're going to get a temperature check on the small business climate with a couple of different businesses in Sacramento that have faced challenges this past year. Najita Guyton is the owner and chef at Jim Denny's, a diner-style restaurant in downtown Sacramento with a historic reputation. David Gall is the mastermind behind New Helvetia Brewing Company. You can find it along Broadway, and it revived a legendary Sacramento beer brand and recently went co-op to survive. And Susan Stewart is the owner of the Strapping Store. It is a gift shop and boutique in Oak Park, as well as other locations, as well as the owner of Licked Ice Cream. Najita, Dave, and Susan, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I really appreciate you taking the time. I can only imagine how busy and how tight your schedules are as small business owners, but it's an important conversation to have. Najita, I want to start with you. You took over the legendary Jim Denny's on 12th Street back in 2023. Of course, not your first business. You made amazing fried chicken at South, which closed its doors in 2022. What led you to Jim Denny's?
Jim Denny's honestly was just an accident. I was sitting on my couch watching the football game, and the gentleman that owns the building got my phone number from his neighbor, who was a former landlord of mine. And he gave me a call and he said, I know you don't know who I am, but I own Jim Denny's and would you be interested in taking it over? And I was like, that would be great. I was like, let's schedule a time in the future to take a look at it. And he was like, well, I was kind of thinking right now. And I was like, kind of had a couple of beers, my friend. I'm watching the game and my team's not doing too good. So later we met up and I did a really quick walkthrough. And for me, I had been eating at Jim Denny's for the past like 10, 15 years. So for me, it was iconic. And I remember the building going for sale and just wishing I had the funds at the time to purchase it and take it over. And, you know, that just wasn't in the stars at that time. So when this opportunity presented itself, it was a no-brainer that I was going to do it. And after, you know, South had just closed about 7 months prior, and, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I kind of needed this new baby to come into my life, and it was the timing was perfect.
When South closed, did you know that you wanted to get back into a restaurant business and continue being a chef in that way?
Oh, absolutely. South was the second restaurant that I had, the fourth business that I had had at that point. And, you know, again, South, and it still has some PTSD closing that restaurant because that restaurant meant so much. You know, it was open for 8 years. It was part of a community that not only I was working in, but I also lived in that same neighborhood and had watched my children, you know, grow up in that neighborhood, watched people in the neighborhood grow up in that neighborhood, watched couples that came in for their first date. And then, you know, years later, they're getting engaged in, you know, our secret private dining room. And so it was one of those things that it just wasn't about losing a business. It was also losing the access to the community that I was in, feeling that that restaurant and I and my family were a part of it.
You mentioned it's your fourth business. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur, small business owner?
Not until yes and no. When I grew up in your traditional Southern family with a father that was an accountant, and so it was one of that lifestyle of you're going to pick your major at like 13, and then you're just going to stick in that, and that's what you're going to do, very traditional. And I actually went to school. My major at UC Davis was aeronautical space sciences and meteorology.
What? That's a hard left.
I had goals of working at NASA and being those people that are in those big jets and they fly like into a tornado to collect data. That's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until I went to college, and one of my father's rules was that if he pays for college, you have to pay for your lifestyle. So I got a job working at Cafe Bernardo, the Davis store. So I was one of the opening servers when they opened that store. And a year in, just working for Randy Perigieri in that store changed my life.
I've talked to other local chefs about how instrumental Randy Perugary was for maybe, you know, sparking that light bulb for what has become a successful career. And this community is so tight-knit. I'm sure you know a lot of chefs in Sacramento, along downtown and midtown and beyond in our area.
Oh, absolutely. The Randy Perugary and the Perugary's restaurants and Stacy Perugary, I want to give credit due to her and Kurt Spataro. They really were such an incubator for what Sacramento had the potential to be in the food and beverage industry. And they were brilliant at it. They opened up many different restaurants that ranged many different styles of food, as price points, cuisine. And so it was... you know, for me, Randy also was, he was a great teacher. You know, when I came to him at 18, 19 years old and I said, hey, I don't want to be a scientist anymore. I want to own my own restaurant. How do I do this? He didn't look at me like, you know, oh, look at this dumb kid. He was like, if you're serious about it, then we'll work on it. And so he would give me homework, like, so writing a business plan, working out the financials, showing him those things. He would literally like red ink it, red line it and say, go back and figure it out. This isn't correct. And I think the greatest piece of advice that he ever gave me is that when I got to the point where I couldn't go any further in his company management wise, was he said, it's time for you to leave. You're a great manager, but you have to go because you don't have enough experience. You need to go work for a corporate restaurant. You need to go work for a hotelier. You need to go work for maybe a casino. You need to spread your wings and have an understanding of what hospitality is on so many different levels. And then when you have done all of that and you feel ready, come back. And I did that. I went out and for 5 years did everything he told me to do. I worked for a casino. I worked for a hotel group. I worked for fine dining. I worked for corporate. I did it all. And then I came back and I rewrote my business plan and sat down with him. We did like a 2-hour session. And he was like, okay, you're ready. And that I opened up my first restaurant a year after that and then opened South 2 years after that.
You mentioned I go back to the wanting to go into the tornado. And I think the restaurant industry might be like that, too, being a small business owner. What are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome just this past year?
This past year has been something kind of different, special. You know, where before with South, we had this wonderful, the economy was different, the neighborhood was different, Sacramento was different, the people that were living in Sacramento were different. We don't have that right now. And so it is a real struggle to not only make sure that I'm creating a menu that is affordable, creating a menu that has a perceived value to the guest so that they feel like when they're coming in and spending their hard-earned dollar, I'm giving them something that is valuable in return. It's also, I think, coming off of the backside of the pandemic and, you know, where we are politically and socially is that there's a little reprieve. I try to make it very palpable that when you're coming into the restaurant, you kind of get a break from all of that. So how can we elevate your mood? How can we make you laugh? How can we satiate whatever need that you have? So there's a psychology behind it as well. I'm not just trying to make memorable food that is affordable, but I also want you to have an experience, even if it's in this like little 10-seat, you know, 90-year-old diner. That's important too. And I think that that's how we establish connections with our guests that come in, regardless of whether it's a diner or it's a retail mm-hmm. space or if it's a brewery. It's very important to make that connection so that I hate to say it to have loyalty, but as we are trying to have loyalty with our guests, we are trying to have that symbiotic relationship in return.
Yeah. I see the both of you also nodding along. So, David, I would love to start with the history of New Helvetia.
Yeah. So we are a 12-year-old brewery here in Sacramento based on the history of the classic Buffalo beer that started in the 1800s in Sacramento. So we're really tied into the community, Sacramento history, the neighborhood in and around Broadway. But we really just wanted to create a place that celebrates Sacramento through beer, mm-hmm. a place to gather, hang out, tell stories, have a pint together.
You recently created a co-op model. Why go that route?
So, you know, looking at our history and what we've done in the community, I think it was important for me to create an avenue for my employees and for the community to be true owners of the brewery. I see this as a Sacramento asset, not my personal asset. And that's not the normal way that most entrepreneurs or business owners think. Like, I just think differently that way. So creating this opportunity of a cooperative, and it is its own legal structure that allows for true ownership. Eventually, this business will grow and it will, flourish and have that potential down the road to, you know, raise up everybody that's a part of that cooperative ownership.
Mm. Nagina was talking about not only the last year, but maybe in the last 4 years, unique challenges for small business owners in the city center. Have you faced that as well along the Broadway corridor?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're on one of the edge districts in Sacramento. So think of like Alhambra and Broadway being those sort of examples, you know, neighborhoods on the other side, the urban core right in the middle. And they present unique challenges that are going to be a little different from the downtown challenges, a little different from the midtown challenges, and certainly not the same as some of the neighborhoods. That's a transitional neighborhood. So, we face a lot of the same urban problems as downtown. We have, just that interface between the street and the customer and the community and the building. We have to be protective of that, and there's human tragedy all around us. And unfortunately, all of us small businesses are facing the same struggle, trying to overcome this challenge.
Were there moments where you were concerned about the viability of your business, whether it could weather these storms?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, COVID was the title change of the entire industry. COVID changed everything that we had to think about and contend with. And we're not recovered. We are not even close to being recovered yet. We have so much work to do in the business community. And, you know, part of going into the co-op model was to try and create a stable customer base. You know, they're owner members. And therefore, there's a loyalty that's created from that. There really is kind of the customer side is hard to pin down right now. It's hard to make connections. It's hard to reach them. It's expensive to reach them if we're paying for any of that type of access. And small businesses like us, we don't have the resources to do that. So we have to get creative. And the co-op is a way to really tie in that community ownership model, but primarily, preserve the brand and keep my employees working, keep them occupied in the space, give us an opportunity to grow and hopefully thrive.
All right, Susan.
Yes.
Let's talk about the strapping
store.
Let's
do it.
How did you create it? When did the light bulb go off?
I was a retail buyer for 15 years before I opened strapping. And I think, I'm sure the three of us can all agree, when you have an entrepreneurial spirit, you kind of have to go with it. If you ever met me, I'm a character. I am not the person that is corporate. And I have been a corporate buyer. So, when you get enough... you get enough no's and your hands are tied behind your back too many times, you kind of want to break free. And at the time when I opened strapping 8 years ago, I was fairly new to Sacramento. I was there. I've only been here for 10 years. And I noticed that we were lacking really kind of fun gift shops. We have two major ones with Mixed Bag and Evangeline's, and they're both amazing, but I just didn't see, it was for an older crowd. I didn't see the faces, the diverse community of Sacramento in those spaces. I just saw one type of demographic, which was older white female. So I wanted strapping to be something different. I'm also a very proud queer person, and I wanted to represent that in Sacramento because there's not a ton of out queer businesses that are thriving, and I felt I'm going to do that with my gift shop, and also again create a safe, exciting environment for people to have here in Sacramento that's a little different than normal.
Yeah. And you've grown to more than one location.
Yeah, I have three spots. I have three locations, and then also Lick, the ice cream store. I'm one of those people when things are going well, and I've been asked this before. How do you measure your success? My success is being able to create jobs, being able to create community. And I was having that massive success going into 2020 when the pandemic hit. And honestly, I opened I opened my Midtown store, 18th and L, 2 weeks before the pandemic. Actually, we went into shutdown for pandemic. So I had these big dreams of growing my business, and then the world kind of shut down. And things changed. And I still, you know, you still have lots of, I don't know, like trust in yourself. If you're a person with a, you know, zero risk factor in your life, I had trust in myself that I was going to still be able to do it even through the pandemic. So I ended up opening a third one at the Ice Blocks complex. And yeah, I mean, I still believe in growth, and I'm sure we'll talk about this right now, but you know, the economy has affected us, and pandemic has affected us, and small business is really, really hard right now. It is really hard.
Yeah, I mean, I would think with your gift shop for the holidays, it would be right up a lot of people's alley. Are you getting the same level of business that you would anticipate for this time of year?
Not at all. It's kind of shocking. 2020, we had a time where we were only allowed to let three or four people in, and you know, it had line out the door. I think it was a point where people were still, they wanted to see Sacramento survive. There was an optimism there in 2020 that we're not seeing now. And so folks, even in that year, the hardest, what people might think of the hardest year for retail was, it actually is doing better than we are now. People are not coming out. We're about 50% down from last year. And last year we were 25% down from the year prior. So we're seeing a pretty steady decrease in sales. I attribute that to a whole society that was traumatized. We were all traumatized together. Nobody really wants to talk about it, but there was a worldwide pandemic. And just like when 9/11 happened or something, you know, any big worldwide or big nation thing, people are going to be traumatized, and they don't, some people like keep their head down and don't think about it. Some people are extremely, you know, ruined by it. But yeah, our world is changing, and Sacramento is changing a lot. And unfortunately, the support for small business in my mind is not there like it was. I think that people are working from home. They are being told by big corporations, big corporations thrive on bringing fear to people. Like, you know, we'll take care of you. Don't worry. We'll give you low prices, and you can stay in your house. We'll deliver those products. Like, it's kind of, you know, it's fear-based politics and fear-based, advertisement from big corporations are keeping people inside. And I just hope that at some point a shift changes and people realize that by not supporting your local small business, you're not only changing the culture and the character of your city, but you're hurting your local economy. And I think you can see that downtown pretty prevalent, and also Midtown, you're starting to see it trickling. And we're all like on the Broadway corridor, or I'm farther down in Oak Park. It's Broadway was hit hard. We aren't a strolling neighborhood. We're not the Broadway is too fast, and the city doesn't seem to really be concerned about what that means for us. But
and Nagina, you're located off 12th Street, and that's kind of a thoroughfare in and of itself, you know, in the city center. Given that this is your fourth restaurant, and piggybacking on what Susan was saying, is the clientele, like the volume of customers, has it been different with Jim Denny's when compared to your other restaurants?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 12th Street, and I mean, I just have to be honest. 12th Street is Willy Wonka's wild ride. It really is. It is such a fight every week to create a space where people that are coming from the few people that we have that are still downtown and working, making them feel safe in that space, that they can come and they can eat and they are not going to get harassed, or they're not going to watch a fight happen, or they're not going to be in a space that is completely filthy with garbage everywhere. That is, which I feel is like that I am the I am the number one garbage man on 12th and I Street. I'm killing it right now because it's just, it's constant. You're just picking it up and picking it up, and it's just a never ending job. And so trying to create, especially when you're in food hospitality, create something that is pleasing for somebody to want to sit and eat a meal and stay and hang out, it's hard. And, you know, I have a liquor license that hopefully is going to go through, and I have to think about, wow, I'm going to have to probably get security and all of these other things that I never would have had to get at South. And when I had Eight American Bistro in Granite Bay, there was no way I even thought about having to get security. And the security is just so that the guests that are inside the space are safe. Not worrying about guests fighting each other. It's to keep the people in okay. And that's another cost. That's $2,000 a month for security.
Wow.
I have 10 seats during the winter. Like, $2,000 a month is more than a payroll.
That is significant. As we wind this conversation down, I want to ask the three of you this, because listeners, they're listening. And what is one thing that they could do right now to support local, regardless of what, you know, their means are? Because cost of living is high, but people still want to show their support. David, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I mean, well, go shop at the Strapping Store and buy some of your Christmas gifts at the Strapping Store. Three locations locally to check out. I mean, supporting local is really the best thing that our listeners and customers can do. For New Helvetia, we are selling co-op memberships. That's how the community can get directly involved with owning a local brewery.
And you're part of the community by supporting it
absolutely.
In that way.
And we're inviting them to please do that. And it also, it makes a great Christmas gift.
That's a great, I mean, that is a wonderful idea. And Susan, to your point, you know, if we just stay home and you're shopping online on apps, you're not really engaging with your community. And there's a loss there. We all lose something when we just kind of stay isolated and stay apart from each other. So what would you tell listeners right now?
Yeah, I always say you have to actively participate in your community, whether it's whether it's actually purchasing something or going to a space, sometimes just giving us a review on Yelp or a post on an Instagram and just saying you're doing a good job, because we are humans and we are struggling as well. And just sometimes a neighborly, hey, I love what you do. I'm really happy to have you here. We'll give you enough of a good spirit to get you through, because we all love our businesses and they're not, we're not here to be rich people. We're here to be a part of our community. And these things are literally blood, sweat, tears, our souls, and honestly, our babies. They're a creation. So there's a lot of vulnerability there. And sometimes just giving us a pat on the back is worth, you know, $1,000. Not really.
Lot.
Not really. But no, I mean, come, yeah. Come around. Still shop. Still shop and still eat.
Nagina, I actually saw one of your recent posts kind of highlighting that, you know, someone, I think, rolled their window down or said that they were just praying that your business survived because they saw a post on Instagram. You've been very open, as Susan as well. And I think that must be such a wonderful, special feeling that people are, that they care.
They care. Oh, absolutely. And I will tell the woman that, I'm sorry, the woman that had rolled her window down, I know I gave her a crazy face because I was like, what do you need? and then literally spent the next like four blocks like crying because I was just so moved by that. But again, to touch base, if you don't have money to spend, social media is humongous. I literally just saw that this was a couple of weeks ago about a coffee shop that's on K Street that closed. And I was reading the comments and people were saying, I didn't even know that there was a gaming coffee shop. We would have gone there had we known. And so I think that when you have, if you can't pay for interaction, something like just sharing a business's post on social media and that blowing up and getting so much traction outside of the community, where I know the three of us have an online merch presence, whether it's a gift card or buying a membership or buying retail products through Strapping, where you'll have people that are even outside of our community purchasing things. Like when we had the break-in, we had people buying t-shirts that didn't even live in Sacramento. And that was great. So it's when, if you could just share a post or a like or whatever, and that broadens our ability, because mm-hmm. we're all busy. We're all owners, and I can't, like, I'm also almost 50. I don't even know how half this stuff works. So, you know, it just the ability for somebody else to send it out to be able to make our, you know, what we do have a bigger audience, that is a humongous help in, you know, adding to the bottom line.
And if those customers are going online to, you know, buy those gifts right now, you know, just consider, hop in the car, head down to the local Main Street and drop into a brick and mortar store. And also, I think the headlines this morning, there's a potential strike coming up. Go to your local retailer. Go to your local restaurant. Go and pick it up.
Well, thank you three for taking the time during your incredibly busy schedules, and I wish you all the very, very best.
Thank you
for having us.
Susan Stewart is the owner of The Strapping Store and Licked Ice Cream. David Gall is the founder of New Helvetia Brewing Company, and Nagina Guyton is the chef and owner of Jim Denny's. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.